Sit there.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare
Thank you.
Jaya Sachinandana, Jaya Gaura Hari. Vishnu Priya Pranadana Nadia Bihari. Vishnu Priya Pranadana Nadia Bihari. Vishnu Priya Pranadana Nadia Bihari. Janamjana Shalakaya Chakshan Militam Yena Tasmi Sri Gurave Nama Namasishna Manumapi Sati Putra Matrasa Rupam Rupam Tasyagra Jamarupurim Maturim Gustavatim Radha Kundam Giriboram Horadhika Madhavasham Praptu Yasya Pratitta Gripaya Sri Gurum Tamnatasmi Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindhubhyaiva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. నిఖిలాశ్రితి మౌళ్య రత్నమాలది నిరాజితా పద పంకజంత అజి ముక్త కులయ పశ్యామనం పరితష్టం హరినం సంశ్రయామి అనారేపిత చరిం తిరాత్ కరుణయావతిర్నా ఖలు చమార్పయితుమున్నతోజ్వలరాసం సభక్తి శ్రియం హరి పురత సుందర దీర్తి కదంబ సుందీపిత సదా హృదయే కందరేష్పురతో వాసచినందన అజానలంబితావజో కనకావదాతు సంకీర్తనైకపితరో కమలాయతక్షు విశ్వంబరో ద్వియావరో జుగధార్మపాల వందే జగత్ప్రియకరో కరుణావతారు లాదిని శక్తి స్వరూపాయ గౌరంగ సూరిదాయ చ భక్త శక్తి ప్రదనాయ దాదర నమస్తుతే ఏ కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దినా బంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపిక కంత రాధ కంత నమస్తుతే రాధే బృందవనాది శ్రీకరుణమృత వాహిని కృపయా నిజ పాదబ్జా దర్శన్ మహ్యం ప్రదీయతమ్ భక్త్యా విహీనాయ అపరాధ లక్ష్య క్షిప్తాష్టకమాదితరంగమాధ్యే కృపామయి త్వం శరణాం ప్రపానం బృందే నమస్తే చరణారవిందం బృందే నమస్తే చరణారవిందం శ్రీ సచ్చినందన్ గౌర హరి కీ జయ శ్రీ శ్రీ గౌర మాధవ కీ జయ శ్రీ శ్రీ గౌర పూర్ణిమ మహోత్సవ కీ జయ శ్రీ శ్రీ గౌర నిత్యానంద కీ జయ శ్రీ శ్రీ గౌర గదాధర్ కీ జయ శ్రీ శ్రీ పంచతత్వ కీ జయ గౌర భక్త బృంద కీ జయ గౌర ప్రమానంద హరి హరి బోల్ సో ప్రణామ్ టు ఆల్ ఆఫ్ యు Welcome to those connected online as well. May we all have a very blessed, deep, profound, broad celebration of Sri Chaitanya Dev's appearance, which is what we are celebrating today, Sri Gaur Purnim, or the full moon, the full golden moon, as a various astrological consideration marks it. Mahaprabhu is this full moon, or the god, the fullest of the godhead, so to say, the goddess, the godhead including the goddess, basically, and Krishna relishing the heart of Sri Radha, and somehow in its own way Sri Radha relishing the heart of Sri Krishna, because this is always mutual, this is always reciprocal. So this has been, it has been described like this. Mahaprabhu has been presented as the ultimate form of the divine, Paratattva Simha, in the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the highest possible reach of the absolute truth, which in itself, absolute truth is absolute. So if something is absolute, it's absolute. You cannot get more than that, but you can get more than that at the same time. That's the nature of the infinite. Infinite means infinite possibilities. And sometimes when we think in terms of the absolute or in terms of the infinite, paradoxically, maybe unconsciously, but paradoxically, we make impose the greatest limits on that. No? Because the infinite is infinite. It cannot happen in this way. It cannot do that. Because the absolute is absolute, this cannot happen. Because it's the absolute. So like he's a finished product. It's a fixed maximum. There is a limited reach, which of course contradicts the very premise of the infinite and the absolute. That's why once Srila Siddha Maharaj famously say what someone told him, he will be speaking how much the finite ask and got a glimpse of the infinite, how the finite can actually conceive the infinite. And someone say, but if the infinite is conceived by the finite, then it can no longer be infinite. How the infinite will be conceived by the finite, that will limit the unlimited. And he will reply to that, like, if the infinite cannot make himself known to the finite, then it cannot deserve to be called infinite, because infinite means infinite possibilities. So each one of the infinite ananta facets of the divine, whenever the divine chooses to appear, is unlimited and infinite, yet somehow or other, in the context of being infinite, some of our teachers have described the each of these different appearances of the divine, though being unlimited and infinite, somehow each of them possess some form of limitation that invites for another form of the infinite, another form of the infinite. No? Like if we want to analyze this in terms of the Das Avatar manifestation, so to say, in the beginning, the unlimited appears as an animal forms. In the beginning, again, all these forms are eternal. It's a way of explaining just to make a point. So he appears as a turtle, as a fish, all these forms, as a boar. So a human animal appearance has its limitations in terms of the full range of love and interaction that happens in human form, in the human experience. So then he appears as half-half, getting closer, Nisrim Hadev, but still he's not able to taste the whole experience of what it means to be fully human and the highest reach of love. And then he appears in another forms, but they are more like a scholar, like a king, like a warrior, which in one sense still has some, how to say, some layer of grandeur on that, or like positioning. I'm a warrior, and I'm like a Brahmin, or I'm like a scholar, like a Buddha, like a Parasuram, or like this or that. Still, all of those are infinite and unlimited, but still there is some limitation in terms of all the possibilities of love. So that's when we will say, okay, the Absolute appears as Krishna. No, he has no grandeur. He's not appearing as a Brahmin, as a scholar. He's appearing as a cowherd in a very so-called limited setting, village setting, but fully human and fully divine, tasting what we call Nara Lila, which is the highest of all lilas, Krishna Raya Tika Kila, Sarvotam Nara Lila, says Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. The human pastimes of Krishna are the highest, Sarvotam. Gopa Besh Venukar Navar Kishor Natavar Nara Lila Haya Nurub. Oh, this Nara Lila is when the Absolute finally can relish Rasa, the fullness of Rasa in his human form. Gopa Besh dresses a cowherd, Gopa Besh Venukar, flute in hand, Navakishore, eternally young, Natavar, king of dancers. Finally, here we have the Godhead in its fullest. Yet, still we are finding, Krishna is finding some interesting paradoxical, not limitations, but in the unlimited relishing of love that he tastes, now Rasa Raj, Sri Krishna in Braj, he finds some new necessities coming as a result of that. In one sense, it's not a limitation. So we will talk about limitation, but we could say all these limitations in the different forms of the Absolute are not limitations, they're just necessities for further experience of love. So even if God takes a form which is infinite and unlimited, the prospect of relishing love is in itself unlimited and infinite. So it begs for further forms, further possibilities. So we could say that all these different forms of God that we know in our tradition and in other traditions as well are different forms that are manifesting as a result of certain type of love and for the sake of relishing a certain type of love. So each form of God facilitates the experience of love for God and for the devotee. Because each devotee will have a certain desire to love God in a certain way. So he will take a form that facilitates that experience for the devotee, but also which facilitates that experience for love. But sometimes, again, God himself wants to taste a particular type of love, we could say. We could say two things, two perspectives. From one side, God takes different forms to facilitate the desire of the devotee to taste a certain type of love, to relate to him in a certain way. Also, we could say God takes different forms according to his own desire of tasting a certain type of love. And of course, Mahaprabhu is very unique in this connection. Sri Chaitanya Dev is the consequence of God as Krishna wanting to taste a certain type of love. Not because of limitations in Krishna Lila, which is unlimited, but because of a necessity that comes as a result of love. And today we are celebrating that, basically. Today we are celebrating the unlimited reach of love, which creates newer eternal necessities in the life of God, and which made him to adopt these unique, endless, unlimited forms, one of them being Sri Chaitanya Dev. Although, in one sense, he's a little bit smaller in the altar here. Don't get the appearances cheat you. No? He's, in one sense, the most expansive. Today we are calling today's lecture Celebrating the Embodiment of Love, of Expansive Love. So that's Mahaprabhu. Although in our eyes the form seems to be smaller or seems not to be expanding, it's expanding. It's expanding. Like when Krishna is in Vrindavan and Yashoda wants to tie him in the Damodar Lila, and it's always two inches too short, or 2 fingers too short. The rope is never enough, so to say. But one could say that Krishna was not expanding. I mean, Krishna was not overtly growing. To the eyes of Yashoda, to the eyes of nobody. Nobody was expanding externally. But we could say the experience of love was expanding. And in that sense, the rope was not enough. Because something was expanding, although beyond one side, Krishna's heart was expanding because of the love and interaction between him and Yashoda. So love was expanding. And in that sense, the always short, rope corresponded with the always expanding love. No? So love is always expanding. You bring new shore, new further rope, but love already is 2 steps ahead, because that's the nature of love. No, it's expansive. So because the nature of love is expansive, we have a God who is also expansive and who becomes again the embodiment of expansive love. So that's what we are celebrating today. We are celebrating today the person of Sri Gauranga. He himself is a celebration unto himself. So just to talk about him is a celebration in itself, we could say. No, that's what his very person is, a celebration. No? Generally in this world, when we speak about a party or a celebration, we conceive of that separately. No? Let's go to the party, and there will be persons in the party. There will be people in the celebration. Generally, the people is not the celebration, because generally people is not that much of a celebration in themselves. So that's why we cannot celebrate people generally. But when something extraordinary is there, whatever expansive love is present there, then the person becomes the party, and to himself, herself, or to speak of God himself. So that's why talking about Krishna, talking about Mahaprabhu, is in itself a festival, because he is a festival. The qualities, the beauty of Krishna, the ever-expansive love, he is an embodiment of all that is a celebration unto itself. In the scriptures, this has been described. Krishna's beauty is an utsav, is a festival. His beauty is a festival. He is a festival. Sri Radha's glory, that's a festival. Mahaprabhu, he is a festival. So to talk about the person who is a festival, that's the essence of, that's the festival. They are the festival, and we just try to say something about the festival that they are. That's what the Bhagavatam says at the very end. Tadeva ramyam ruchiram navam navam. To talk about Krishna's Navam Navam is a source of pleasure. Taneva Ramyam is a source of taste. Ruchiram Navam Navam is something which is always new. Taneva Sashvam Manaso Mahotsavam. And it's a permanent, perpetual festival for the mind. That's Harikatha. That's how Harikatha, Gaur Katha is described in Bhagavatam. Sashvan Manaso Mahotsavan is a perpetual festival for the mind. Why? Because they are a festival in themselves. So to try to say something about them, to try to touch upon one point of the unlimited glories of the divine, that's a festival unto itself. There may be a prasad, there may be kirtan, there may be gifts, there may be whatever, cows. So we have all that here today. But in itself, they are the festival, embodied festival. So we are trying to open our mind to just grasp the festival, so to say, grasp the personification of all celebration. Because festival is tied with celebration. Today the title is celebrating the embodiment of expansive love. So celebration is not just a, as we always use this word, celebration can be a noun, but celebrating, no? To celebrate is a verb also. No? So celebration, to celebrate, ultimately is the ultimate possible, the only possibility left when we understand what reality is about. When we get a proper glimpse on the nature of existence, the only option is celebration, basically. That's kind of the, if we want to boil down everything to one single act, by properly like ascertaining who God is, what reality is, what's the ultimate nature, purpose, meaning of things, the only thing to do is to celebrate, to celebrate existence. Now, that's why kirtan is basically that, one way of translating kirtan, which is Mahaprabhu's gift to the world, of Mahaprabhu's extended heart to the world. Kirtan means celebration. Kirtan doesn't mean a musical performance. Kirtan means celebrating the fullness, wholeness of existence. Like Ilya Delia will say, the unbearable wholeness. It's too much. I cannot bear it. It's unbearable. Unbearable wholeness of being, of existence, of my potential, of God's existence. So celebration is the only option. Again, Mahaprabhu himself is celebration. He is the festival himself, personified. Festival personified, celebration personified. And his heart, extended, taking a certain shape, becomes kirtan, which translates as celebration. Because it comes from the person who is celebration himself. So kirtan cannot be but celebration. And that cannot be but the only possible reaction to what reality is. There are different ways to address this, but it's all the same. Like lila, the word lila. For Gaudiya Vaishnavas, everything is lila, ultimately. Not only Krishna lila, but even whatever is going on this side of the planet, that's called Srishti lila. The lila of creation. Lila is translated sometimes as play, divine play, non-dual play. Everything is play in the eyes of the Gaudiya mystics. Everything is celebratory movement. That's another way of describing lila. Lila, real lila, when you are immersed in play, you are celebrating existence. Krishna says in the third chapter of the Gita, I have no, I do not need to act. I'm okay without acting. I'm Atmaram. I'm self-satisfied. So I don't need to act. I can just be relaxed and be, and I'm okay with that. Like Narayan is generally depicted in Vaikuntha. He's mostly lying, and Lakshmi Devi is massaging his feet. So yes, of course, he derives some pleasure from that feet massage and that service, loving disposition from Lakshmi Devi. We don't want to downplay that, Srimati Lakshmi Devi Ki Jai. But at large, God is just lying there in that level, and he's okay with that. No, there is so much to him that he can just lie for eternity. And that's fine, he's okay. There's lots to draw from his depths. So, but Krishna says in the Gita, despite that, I act. Despite I don't have the need to act, and in some of my forms, Mahavishnu, I'm eternally sleeping. Narayana, I'm almost eternally napping. No, not sleeping by bordering, because too much feet massage may bring some dizziness. But he's okay. He's enjoying life. He's self-fulfilled, Atmaram. And on top of that, I act, he says in the Gita. In other words, I perform Leela. No, I celebrate my fullness, basically. Like the other day, we were given a lecture in Alatra. We were talking about God being having necessities, and it was a little bit difficult to grasp for some people, as it should be, so to say. So we conclude on this point. Actually, the necessity that God has, because if we hear necessity, we cannot generally avoid but compare with our necessities, which come from a place of emptiness mostly. We are empty and we have needs. We are needy because we have a huge existential hole in our heart in one way or another. So Krishna is not like that. So his needs do not come from a place of lacking, but from a place of brimming, being filled, fulfillment. So there is a need to celebrate your fullness. That was basically the conclusion. Yeah, God has the need to celebrate his fullness. Because one quickly may say, he has needs, that means he's empty. He's lacking. No, he's full, and that fullness creates its own needs. So that was what we call Leela, celebratory movement. Krishna, and Kirtan, sorry. If Leela is a celebratory movement where God, they are all satisfied, ever satisfied, God acts and moves to just celebrate his fullness, then Kirtan, which is described as sometimes also as celebrations, Kirtan is a celebration of that celebration. God is celebration personified, festivity personified, Mahotsav personified. He's a festival of beauty, festival of love, festival of qualities, a festival of ever-expansive affection. And that overflows him to the point that he cannot see it, and he starts to celebrate. He starts to celebrate the very celebration that he is. He's a festival personified. She is a festival personified. They are festival personified. Female, masculine, plural, all put together. So they are festival personified. They need to celebrate that festival. So that's Leela. And we are celebrating the celebration of their celebration that they are. And that's what we call Kirtan. So Kirtan is a celebration of reality, which reality is Leela, which means celebration. And that comes from ultimate reality itself, which is festival personified. So we are celebrating that today. This Kirtan, Kirtan, of, as we know, is not only, as I mentioned, musical performance, of course, that's not Kirtan, musical, but Kirtan entails a musical celebration, as we did Sankirtan, but also to speak, to share words, Harikatha, to try to say something about the unlimited, that's also Kirtan. That's one of the main aspects of Kirtan. So the process for this age is Kirtan, and one aspect of Kirtan is what we are doing exactly now. And that's why the Bhagavatam, when the Bhagavatam speaks about who is the main person who personifies the perfection of Kirtan, the example is Sukadev Goswami, interestingly, who was not doing Kirtan with kartals and mridanga, but was opening his lotus mouth to bite the fruit of the Bhagavatam and make it sweeter. And as we say, he was not engaging in Kirtan, but Parikshit Maharaj needed to create Kirtan when Sukadev Goswami will pass out by his Kirtan. He will speak about Krishna, he will fall in ecstasy and faint. And Parikshit Maharaj still has 7 days to live, and the Krishna Leela was not fully present, so he will bring devotees to perform Kirtan, to awake, to bring Sukadev out of the trance, or to make him enter into another trance, from trance to trance, so to say. So sorry, I got stuck in the word celebrating of the title of today's lecture. That's a lot. No? So celebrating the embodiment of expansive love. That's what we are celebrating today, Sri Chaitanya Dev. His embodiment of expansive love, which means love has a shape. The embodiment of love. No, love is not just a mere energetic abstraction, but it's the most concrete reality. And that's why Gaudiya Vaishnava will give love a shape. There are different ways of saying that. Of course, Sri Radha is also the shape of love. Everyone, each one of her ornaments are described as bhavs, as forms of ecstasy, to make the point. Each part of her shape is made of love, or to make the point, love has a shape, you know, whatever perspective you choose. But we will say that love exists, love has a shape. We can call it in a general way God. God is love, love is God, more precisely Sri Radha, or in a unique way Sri Chaitanya Dev. Because as we were talking these days, we cannot separate who Sri Chaitanya is from the glory of Sri Radha's love. No? If we do away with the love of Sri Radha or with the love that Sri Radha is, because again, Sri Radha doesn't have love, she is love. One of her names is Mahabhava Swarupini, which is the very nature of the highest form of emotion and love. That's she, that's her. She's the embodiment of that. So again, to talk about Mahaprabhu is to talk about Sri Radha. And to talk about Sri Radha is to talk about love. So basically, when we celebrate Gaur Purnima, we are unfolding the possibilities of love. And a love that is expansive. That's the point. Love cannot but be expansive. As we said the other day, love cannot be conditional. We cannot say conditional love. So to say unconditional love is kind of a redundancy, because love is unconditional. At the same time, love cannot be limited. The nature of real love is unlimited. So to say unlimited love is, again, redundant, but we may need to say all these things to remind ourselves of what actual love is. To say non-expansive love, no, it's a contradiction of terms. So we are saying today expansive love, but that's what love is. So love is expansive. Love is limited. Love is unconditional. If not, it's not love. So we need to make that point very intensely. So we stop, we stop calling love things which are not love, so to say. We stop creating in our own minds like a fictitious idea of love. Because if we have the fictitious idea of love, we'll be looking for that. If that's love for us, something conditional, limited, non-expansive, reaching a fixed maximum, having some limit in its ultimate reach, then that will be love for us. And we hear, okay, I want love. I will look for that type of love. And you will find it, but that's not love. You will find conditionality, limitation, non-expansiveness, contraction, all in the name of love. That's what you will find everywhere. That's not difficult to find. So the real challenge in our human experience, so to say, one of the challenges, of course, is to learn to redefine love and to engage in the search of that redefined love, to reach the proper definition, proper version of love, to find a form of God that matches that proper definition of love, and then to dedicate the rest of our lives to pursue that. That's basically Sambandha Videya Prayojan. No, like, first get love right. No, learn the proper definition of love, learn the proper attributes of love, have them in mind. Now connect that with a God that is synonymous with that, that reflects that in how the divine is acting, and then conceive yourself in relationship to that. See yourself in the midst of that with a beautiful potential, ever-expansive potential. As we always say, bhakti is shakti, bhakti shakti. Bhakti is an energy. Radha is the ultimate form of bhakti personified. But when we want to talk in terms of energy, bhakti is that. And bhakti is a potency, it's a shakti, potency, and potency has potential. We have to, again, to follow this type of sequence. Any potency has potential. And any energy renews itself perpetually. That's the nature of any energy. What to speak of love as an energy? So if energy is potency, potency implies potential, and energy renews itself, then this bhakti potency, this love personified, is characterized by perpetual novelty, ever freshness, ever newness. As we said the other day, I think it was at Pranada's place, Bhakti Rasa liked that one. Love has no opposite. True love cannot have a contrary. When you really attain true love, there can only be augmented versions of that love, expanded layers of that love. That's the only thing. Love cannot turn into hate, fear, unlove, betrayal, hypocrisy, dualism. No, no. Real love can only become real, more real love. True love can only become truer love, so to say, more perfect, more complete, so on and so forth, ad infinitum. So Sri Chaitanya Devi is that. Sri Chaitanya Devi is God himself, like jumping, diving wildly into the deepest ocean of love, which is Radha's heart. Mahaprabhu is this deep adventurer. No, one name for God is Urukrama. That's another conversation altogether, but once came this inspiration to, I wrote some articles about that to explain the Atmaram verse of the Bhagavatam in terms of Krishna, because generally this verse, Atmaramas Chamunayo Nirganta Api Urukrame Kurvanti Haitukim Bhakti Mitam Bhuta Gunohari, speaks about how Atmarams, people who are self-satisfied, nonetheless feel attracted when hearing about Krishna. Also, that's a very famous verse of the Bhagavatam, which Mahaprabhu explained in so many ways, which speak about how bhakti is about mukti, no? About jnana. No? How someone who attains self-satisfaction on other paths, when they hear the Bhagavatam, they attain something beyond satisfaction. And Sukadeva Goswami is an example of that. He was beyond the gunas, he was self-satisfied. He left to the forest, but he heard some verses of the Bhagavatam, and he returned back to Vyasadeva's ashram like if he will be like hypnotized, so to say, right? So this verse speaks about, on one level, that, but on one level we could say, Atmaram Asyamunayu, Atmaram is the name for Krishna also. So not only a person who is Atmaram feels attracted to bhakti, but he who is Atmaram, ultimately Krishna, feels attracted to bhakti, personified in the form of Sri Radha, to the point that he becomes dissatisfied in his Atmaram condition, and he longs to attain something else. He becomes affected by that bhakti to the point that he becomes transcendentally dissatisfied. Because that's the nature of ever-evolving love. You can always taste more. That's the thirst. And therefore, that person who is Atmaram becomes Urukrama. Atmaramas chamunayo kurvanti api Urukrame. So Urukram means the great adventurer. So he who is Atmaram, self-satisfied, becomes the great adventurer. He enters into a laboratory we call Gaur Lila. He will do a very interesting experiment, a very interesting adventure. So we call God, that's a very beautiful name for God, the adventurer, the great adventurer. He, as also I read the other day, Lia Delio said, God is more interested in adventure than in keeping the statu quo. No. Atmaram may be more a statu quo God. No? He's self-satisfied. Everything is self-satisfied. Everything is in place. Not that bigger surprises, not that bigger like unpredictability, not that much more of Leela. That's what we never heard. Narayan Leela, Vishnu Leela. There's not much adventure there. But when we go to Krishna, and Krishna especially as Mahaprabhu, oh, he really fully deserves the title Urukram, the great adventurer. Urukrama. Krama means like steps. And Uru means like astonished. He who takes astonishing steps. That's interesting. So that's translated as the great adventurer. Because that's what it means. If you are an adventurer, you will take bold steps in your life. You will venture yourself into regions and areas you have never thought before. So that's Mahaprabhu. That's Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is Krishna entering to that adventure, which means tasting Radha Bhava, seeing himself from the lens of her love, no? Gaining that newer perspective. That's an adventure because it's an experiment that nobody knows in what will end, what will happen. That's so intense. That's, as we mentioned, radical personalism. In that moment, Krishna enters into his most vulnerable space. Because vulnerability is generally defined as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Generally, that's a scholarly definition of vulnerability. You experience some risk, you experience uncertainty, and you expose yourself emotionally. So all these three things are happening in this great adventure we call Gaur Leela, because Krishna is exposing himself to the emotions of Radha, emotional exposure, and that creates uncertainty. No? What will happen? I don't know. Or that's triggered by uncertainty. You know? Krishna himself being uncertain about what's the heart of Radha and who I am in her eyes. I'm uncertain about this. So let's expose myself to her emotions. Let's embrace the adventure and risk. There's risk. This is a risky project. What will happen with Krishna? Mm-hmm. Especially for Sri Radha, you know, in her own mind, it's like, I mean, Sri Radha cannot even, she's barely surviving. Well, when she thinks that Krishna is walking barefoot in Vrindavan, and there's a potential risk, not even it's happening, but there's a potential risk that he may touch his soft lotus-like feet, soles with a pebble in Vrindavan's forest, which nonetheless the cows always pulverized and made them soft so nothing happens. But the only thought of a potential contact of a pebble with Krishna's soft foot soles throws Sri Radha to the like borders of death, basically. No? She's about to die just by the mere thought of the potential possibility of Krishna's experiencing that like lack of comfort. It's not happening. But just the hypothetical chance of that is like throwing her to that situation. That's how fanatical she is of Krishna's pleasure. So what to speak now? Then she realizes, okay, Krishna wants to taste my heart. And she knows what's in her heart, in one sense. The intensity of her emotion, the intensity of her suffering, of her love, of her dedication, of her... I mean, it's an ocean of multiple waves. So she knows how Krishna will be affected by that. What to speak of a little pebble of the foot of on his foot. So he'll be throwing, falling on the ground and crying and hitting his head on the wall and bleeding and sweating. So risk, again, going back to the three attributes of vulnerability, there is risk. That's why Sri Radha's embracing Krishna, Radha Bhava, duty. Subalitam Nami Krishna Swarup. And she's embracing Krishna with her own hue, you know, with the idea of, you know, I will be present in you in the form of my complexion, and I will receive all that because I cannot tolerate that your body, your soft body, will be in touch with that, the wildness of my love. So I will cover you and envelop you with my hue and my hue. I will be there in the form of my hue, and I will be receiving that in service. And I will be enveloping you from the outside and from the inside with my bha. In her form is in Krishna Lila, Sri Radha is Krishnamayi. So Krishnamayi means she's filled with Krishna. No, I mean, whatever it's about her is about is Krishna. I mean, her eyes are black like Krishna's complexion. So if she sees herself in a mirror, she will think about Krishna by seeing her own eyes, by seeing her own dark hair. That reminds her of Krishna's hue, her sari, that's the color of Krishna. So if she sees outside of herself to the cloud of tamal tree, everything reminds her of Krishna outside, externally, because she's filled with Krishna internally. So in that sense, Sri Radha is Krishna Mayi. She's filled with Krishna. And Krishna's Mahaprabhu will be Radha Mayi. He will be filled with Radha on the inside, experiencing Radha Bha, but also on the outside, being totally embraced and covered by her complexion because of the emotional exposure and the risk that takes. And so Mahaprabhu becomes the all vulnerable God because he's filled with this risk, uncertainty, emotional exposure in this great adventure we call Gaur Lila. So he's not only the almighty God, he's the all vulnerable God. We need both of them to have the complete equation. No, God is not only almighty, he's also all vulnerable. But all vulnerable, if you are vulnerable and expose your vulnerability in front of a proper person, you will be nourished by that exposure. You will be empowered. If we as humans are naked, so to say, vulnerable, open, transparent in front of someone who can appreciate the vulnerability, will honor our vulnerability, we will be filled and supported and inspired and empowered. So in the same way, this applies to God. So when Krishna's Mahaprabhu becomes all vulnerable, he's all vulnerable in the context of Radha Bha. So there are proper boundaries there. No? Because as we say, vulnerability without boundaries is no vulnerability, it's abuse. So Mahaprabhu is Krishna being fully vulnerable, but there are boundaries. All this is happening in certain context, in certain perimeter. And therefore, the vulnerability that he's experiencing turns into empowerment. And that's why Mahaprabhu can be all vulnerable, but all mighty in the sense of all empowered, all volcanic, the golden volcano of divine love. Because he's being filled with Radha's unconditional, ever-expansive love. Again, Radha's love is unconditional. She's saying at the end of Shikshastakam, Radha is saying, Krishna can embrace me, cannot give me his darshan, cannot give me his darshan. It doesn't matter. Those conditions are secondary. He is my prananath. In all of those conditions, unconditionally, he's my beloved. And that unconditionality of Radha's love is tasted by Mahaprabhu. And it's an unconditional love which is in constant growth, in constant expansion. Anuragavati, one name of Radha is Anuragavati. She who experiences anurag for Krishna. She, an anurag means an attachment so deep that, how to say, love is growing in such a degree that at every moment, Krishna appears new. Krishna appears fresh into her eyes. So it's a new person because it's a new love. It's a new person. It's a new love. It's a new love. New love makes for a new person, so to say. New person makes for new love. This psychology of anurag is such that we could say that Srimati Radharani, she's so committed to serving Krishna and loving Krishna, and she's so absorbed in the present moment that she, it's a way of explaining that. The commitment of love is such that there's no place for memories because there's already some need for service in the here and now. So I don't have time to remember what happened 5 seconds ago. I don't have to remember who were you 5 seconds ago. I'm just totally dedicated and committed to who you are now. How can I offer myself in service now? There's no time to look back. There's no time for memories. That will be like a negligence of my present duty in the exact moment. That's how psychology of ultimate love operates. And that's why we could say when Sri Radha and Krishna were together, but after a few seconds, they no longer recognize each other. They cannot grasp what happened before, because before is before. They were fully dedicated to that moment. They did what they had to do. Now it's a separate moment. So that now there is a need for a new awareness of who they are, for a further recognition of who they are now in their ever-expansiveness. That's how it works, no? So that's Sri Radha. That's Sri Radha is the personification of this pattern. So no wonder Krishna wants to become Urukram, the great adventurer. He wants to leave his Atmaramata. He wants to leave his self-satisfaction, his statu quo-like God form, no? Like stable God, more static, more predictable, self-satisfied, more quiet, and just, again, jump, make this quantum leap, no? That we call Gaur Lila, no? Quantum leap. Urukram, the great adventurer. And the adventure never ends. No? That's a great adventure. No? An adventure that never ends, that's an adventure. An adventure that has a beginning and an end. How much you can call an adventure? It's an ad, Maximo. Advertisement, an ad. An adventure, it's one that you can venture into that forever. Forever. That's why Gaur Lila is eternal. Gaur Lila must be eternal because Radha's heart is bottomless, is boundless. The experience of love is, again, in constant expansion. There's always a new commitment to be attended in the present moment and need someone who is a great adventurer who's relishing that, tasting that. So that's our logic for saying Gaur Lila is eternal. And one says, someone asked me today, wrote to me, valid question about something like, okay, what we are celebrating today, that Mahaprabhu came to this world, like 500 and a few more years ago, and that he did that to taste, so to say, Radha Bhav. But did Krishna like had this desire 500 a few years ago? So it happened before that, and so on and so forth. No? So yeah, it was a question trying to understand something from the timeline of this planet, and of course, we needed to go beyond that, and we need to make the point that this is an eternal lila. This is something that happens without a beginning, but without an end. Both things are important to clarify. No? Because if not, we will think, okay, Gaur Lila began 500 years ago, 48 years, over. Game over, that's Gaur Lila. That's Mahaprabhu. And it's like, no. He's the great adventurer. A great adventure means, in one sense, not only doesn't have an end adventure, it does have a beginning. That's a great adventure. No? Although, again, language is limiting, and we are talking like if this begins at some point, just like to try to understand the backdrop of this particular lila. But in one sense, Gaur Lila doesn't have a beginning and doesn't have an end. Sri Chaitanya Lila Hai Sarobarakshoi Manuhamsa Charati Tahate. Krishna Lila Amritasar Tara Sapta Satadar. Says Chaitanya Charitamrita. Says Krishna Lila Amritasar. Krishna Lila is the essence of all nectar. And Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Lila Hai Saraba, is like a fountainhead from which the Krishna Lila is flowing in 100 directions. Srila Siddhartha Maharshi will interpret that verse as Gaur Lila is like a fountainhead. And he said, Manuhamsa charati dahat, let the swan of your mind forever swim in that ocean called Gaur Lila. So yeah. Radha's heart is unlimited. Therefore, the adventure of tasting her heart is unlimited. Radha's heart has no, it's an ocean, but an ocean with no beginning and end. In this world, we don't see the beginning and end of an ocean, but we know it has beginning and end. But her heart is compared to an ocean, but one that doesn't have beginning and end. So the project of tasting that cannot have beginning and cannot have an end. Therefore, Mahaprabhu celebrated not only today, hopefully, forever, by us, as the embodiment of expansive love. So that unique form of God, who is perpetually dedicated to swim, to relish, to honor, to serve, and to extend to us that possibility of what love is, what's the real nature of love as an ever-expansive reality. So what we said recently, and here we are today here in this little spot of North Carolina, as a byproduct of this. No, we are a consequence of what we have been talking about the last hour. And we are a byproduct of Mahaprabhu's experiment, of Mahaprabhu's adventure. God is on an adventure mode perpetually. That's what keeps the Leela going. That's what keeps the Leela meaningful and always new. And we are invited to be part of that Leela, part of that adventure. And so Krishna consciousness can be rightfully seen as an adventure and should be lived as an adventure. The moment we stop experiencing bhakti as an adventure, we are missing something, because God is on adventure mode forever. So to remain aligned with God's will means to keep this adventure spirit. An adventurer again. What means adventure? When you hear the word adventure, what comes to your mind? If I tell you, let's go for adventure today, what implies? What's the implications of an adventure?
Exploring.
Newness.
Traveling.
Traveling, journey, excitement.
Risk,
thank you. I wanted that also. So all that has to be part of the adventure of Krishna Bhakti. There may be risk, or we may perceive a risk. There may be a perceived risk. Ultimately, there is no risk, but there may be a perceived risk, and nonetheless, we have to embrace the adventure. And that's what Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will say. In the beginning, we will feel too much risk, no gain. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, right after saying Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, surrender, abandon everything, give to yourself to me. He say, Masucha, don't fear. Because he knows we are trembling. No? We are invited for adventure. Jump off the cliff. Krishna says, I'm down receiving you. And he's like, wow, that's an adventure. I'm trembling, I'm paralyzed, I'm frozen, I'm terrified. Krishna, don't fear. Join the adventure, don't fear. So we will perceive risk, fear. And even we may perceive in the beginning, too much fear, no gain. I'm losing all here. I'm risking all. This is madness. So somehow in those moments, we may gain some courageousness by witnessing how other people who will appreciate this more involved in life as an adventurer jumping into the cliff, and they are returning after the cliff and joining us again, like, here I am alive, the party's going on down there, so we can jump together next time. Okay, I'm still fearing, but I'll venture to the adventure. So in the beginning, we'll be perceived as that, oh, bhakti journey, spiritual life, entering into all these inner dynamics, too much risk, no gain. But then Srila Siddhartha says, the more you appreciate the actual nature of the whole thing, you will think in terms of the more I risk, the more I gain. So still you perceive risk, but you start to perceive gain as well. In the beginning, you only perceive risk. Then second stage, you perceive risk, but you perceive gain. and you pursue it. And then you ultimately, when you are fall into the adventure you release, no risk, all gain. Risk becomes all gain. All gain. Or even if we may perceive risk, still there's all gain. It's only perceived risk. Like the gopis on a daily basis, they perceive the risk in the lila by joining Krishna. They can get us. And the whole project will go into ruin. There is a perceived risk, but there's all gain always. They're all for the gain, which is Krishna's pleasure. No, like the famous lila of Krishna's headache. No? Yeah. Faked headache. It's not real. And the gopis, and Narada Muni telling the gopis, only rest before Krishna's headache to be healed is the dust from your feet. And of course, he tried with so many other devotees, and the devotees were not willing to give their dust of their feet because there were lots of risk. And they said, I will go to hell if Krishna puts my foot dust on his head. It's like the worst possible heresy you could conceive. But when the gopis received those news, they forgot the risk. Literally speaking, they forgot the risk. Even if technically one could say there is a risk, Narada Muni was trying to bring back the risk, but do you know what's the consequence of it? The gopis were having like another priority in mind, another consideration, which is Krishna has a headache and that must be relieved. That's the only risk for us, is that Krishna's headache may continue. That's the risk. The risk for him to suffer. So let's do it. Nara is like, but there is risk for you that you can go to hell for doing this eternally. Never. But there's no eternal hell, just in case. And the gopis say, no, the only risk is that Krishna's headache may continue. Everything else is secondary consideration. They do not feel it is risk again. That means all gain, actually, no, full gain. That type of investment in reality means full gain. You are already there, gain. Artha. Artha means gain. And Krishna Prem is known sometimes as Paramartha. All gain, highest gain. So this gain is such that, yeah, Krishna wants to taste it himself. Krishna wants to taste a new flavor of love, so to say, new. It's ever new in the form of Mahaprabhu. So turning from Atmaram to Urukram. Self-satisfied, great adventurer. Which means eternally dissatisfied. That's adventure. Dissatisfied in the good sense. Because you can always taste further love. So that creates a new thirst at every step, at every moment. But God is willing to do that. I mean, God himself is taking the bold step, like, okay, I'm entering into this adventure. I'm entering all this risk, this journey, excitement, possibility. I'll leave my self-satisfaction behind and I embrace something else. That's what I should learn that verse by heart. I did, and I forgot. I'm such a rascal. Let's see if I have it here. No, probably I have to know. I have to look it for. I have to look for that. But there is this beautiful verse in. Anyhow, I'll look for that. Just to conclude, beautiful verse from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in which, one second. I mean, I can say something, but I wanted to share the Sanskrit also. Where basically, Sanatana Goswami says the topmost limit of godhood, of Bhagavatva, topmost limit of being God, means that God is leaving aside his Atmaram, no? Atmaramata. His side as, here it is. Yes. Bhagavatamrita second count four chapter verse 228 verse 228. Yeah, it's one of my favorite verses. And therefore, I should memorize it. So I'll try to commit myself. I did it, and but sometimes you memorize verse, you have to really learn them by heart, which is not the same as memorizing. Vishato nagara se karasya swarama tadi swaguna pavadai apekshaniya parama priya sakashta para shri bhagavatva simna. So Sanatana Goswami says, it's a very interesting verse. It is specially noteworthy that the crest jewel of all clever heroes, Krishna, can forego his atmaramata, his self-satisfaction, and all his other qualities, but he cannot give up his quality of coming under the control of his beloved devotees. He accepts their control graciously. This alone is the ultimate limit of his godhood. So that's a very interesting idea. The ultimate limit of being God means that you are willing to leave everything, including your sense of being God, but not your sense of being controlled by the love of your devotees. That's the main defining feature of the divine. I'm controlled by the love of my devotees. So ultimately, one could say this verse is talking about Mahaprabhu, because as Mahaprabhu, Krishna is the great adventurer. He's leaving aside his not only his atmaramata, his self-satisfaction, but even his sense of identity as Krishna. Now, Krishna is leaving his sense of identity as God in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't remember his God, so to say. That's fair enough by the strength of the love of Raj. But as Mahaprabhu, Krishna is leaving his sense of God. Mahaprabhu is Krishna leaving aside his sense of Krishna and entering into the Radha's shoes, but never leaving the sense of I'm the control of my devotee. No. In fact, that's the main sense of Mahaprabhu's mood. No. I'm the control of my devotee. I'm the control. No, he's fully controlled by the love of Radha to the point that he forgets his Krishna. Not only he forgets his God, he forgets his Krishna. Mm. And that alone, says Sanatana Goswami here, para shri bhagavatva simna. This is the ultimate limit of being God, of bhagavatva. Bhagavatva. Bhagavan is God. Bhagavatva means Godhood. So the parasimna, or the ultimate reach or limit of being God, means basically this. Mahaprabhu means leaving your sense of self-satisfaction, as it says here, and all his other qualities, swaguna, all of them, including his sense of being Krishna, to fully put himself under the control of his highest devotee, Sri Radha. So, a few words we want to share today regarding our celebration of Sri Sri Gaur Purnima, celebrating the embodiment of expansive love. So, I don't know if there are any comments or questions, something you may like to share before we are concluding our English session. Later I have the Spanish one. To Monty.
I just wanted to basically comment and appreciate what you were saying about our conception of love and how we have to really look at that and start using it properly. And I just know how I throw the word around. I love ice cream.
especially with ice cream, yeah.
Flowers.
Yeah,
I love.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to create neurosis in how people express themselves on a daily basis, but I mean, there may be some research there, but I assume that a few centuries ago, people wouldn't say I love ice cream. Of course, there wouldn't be ice cream at that centuries ago, but people wouldn't use the word love to refer to, like, to things, you know, like I love my car, I love chocolate, I love. But in time, again, there may be someone had already did this research, like how the word love has been used throughout time and gradually applied to more and more things in which there is no actual love, no? And there is no actual reciprocation, because love is reciprocal. When you say I love ice cream, I mean, it's only just in one sense, one-sided. No? I'm just taking this and enjoying this whole thing. So we use that, you translate that act as love, but actually it's not that you are loving ice cream. You follow, I can say I love ice cream, but you will never say I am loving ice cream. But if you are not loving ice cream, you don't love ice cream. You follow? It's like if I say I love my mom, but I'm not loving my mom. It's like, no, the two have to go together. But generally we say I love chocolate, but you will never say I'm loving chocolate. No, I'm engaged in providing love. No. So when you say you love chocolate, you're not meaning that. You're saying something else. You follow? But it's interesting, as you mentioned, no? Like how we can use this same word and how the word unconsciously, without bad intention, but unconsciously, love starts to become something more to us or something less. And it starts to be reduced to what we experience with ice cream as chocolate, so to say, to give an example, of course, instead of us keeping in mind the actual meaning of the word and the highest reach of that and the ever-expansive nature of love, which has nothing to do how we may apply the word in relation to matter or even to other people that we treat as matter. Because also many times, many of us, we objectify people. Mm-hmm. At one point, there is no much difference for us between my car and my daughter. So to say, which is not the idea, of course. And then we use the word, I love my car. And then you say, I love my daughter. But you say, I love my daughter in the same way you will say that to your car or to chocolate. And again, all this real meaning and dignity of love gets lost and gets reduced and gets...
And it's ultimately its connection to God. This becomes...
And that technically, without... We don't want to create neurosis to anyone, but that's really apparat. And by apparat, I mean here the meaning of the word apparat means to go against love. Which by this I'm not saying you are receiving a reaction, that I'm not implying that direction. I'm saying apparat means to go against love. So I will say to go, one of the main things that imply to go against love means to define, to apply, to get a wrong meaning of love and to apply that in a cheap way, in a diluted way, that means to go against love. You follow my point? And to become convinced that love is just this, instead of all that love is, that means to go against love. To keep my wrong definitions of love is a way of going against love. Because I may be convinced love is this, and that thing that I say love has more to do with selfish enjoyment or exploitation. Now in this world, people say to others, I love you, and many times that's the opposite. So that's to go against love. You don't need like to kill someone to go against love. You may just be redefining the word inaccurately, wrongly, limitedly, especially the word like love. So let's not be apparatus, please. Let's define love properly and then play out the implications of that definition somehow, right? Mahaprabhu came to remind us of that. No? He's leading by example, and as the Bhagavad Gita says, jajada jarat acharati shristas, whatever great man does, rest follow. So great man, here you have the greatest man, Mahapurush, the greatest man doing something, showing an example of how to appreciate and treat love. Whatever a great man does, we are expected to follow. So that's the ultimate celebration of Gaur Purnima. That's how we can keep Gaur Purnima alive on a daily basis, how we can keep Mahaprabhu alive on a daily basis by trying to follow that, trying to follow the celebration that he's engaged in, so to say. Anyhow, thanks for the point. Yeah. Okay, we are almost 1 hour and a half. Something else before concluding, whether those present in 3D or those present in 2D online. Okay, so we'll conclude here, quote unquote, continue the rumination process. No, Shravana, Bharana, Srila Siamaras will say beautifully. I conclude with this. I think I promise. Shravana, Bharana, Sadhana, Apana, Prapana. He will mention these five stages, which means Shravana means to listen. Bharana means to accept what we have listened, like to process, digest. Sadhana means to put into practice what I've heard and accepted. For this apana, which means to have a realization after doing that practice on the basis of what I accepted and heard. And prapana means to share that realized gift to others. So Shravana, apana, Shravana, we are listening, we have been listening. Bharana, we are trying to accept, process, understand, digest, ruminate on. Sadhana, how do I take all these words and ideas and notions and make them my lifestyle, take them into my practice, which is my life? Sadhana, then apana, a result will come, a realization, an insight, a fruit, and then prapana. That's what I can ultimately give to others. That's it. I cannot give to others what I don't have realized myself. So let's continue engaging in this ongoing sequence, which doesn't have an end, so to say. So, but we move from one chamber to another. So thank you so much to all. Sri Satchinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gaur Purnim Ki Jai. Shri Hari Nam Prabhu Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nityananda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Gadadhar Ju Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Radha Madhav Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol, Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaiva Cha, Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namah, Ananta Koti Vaishnavibhyo Ki Jai. For those who know Spanish, see you at 6 p.m. You have 5 hours to learn Spanish. See you there. Yeah. Go ahead, you.